We always get the crazies on Christmas. That's what I told myself when she walked in. She looked rattled and perhaps wasted with her wide and maniacal light blue eyes. Bushy, dark brown hair lined with streams of gray and smeared eyeliner. Other than that, she looked no different than any average mid-30s brunette to me. Though I had no doubt she was just some tweaker who came into the station to report that someone had stolen her stash or some other dumb issue I wasn't remotely in the mood for, when she spoke, I was a bit lost for words.
I'm here to confess.
She stuttered in a soft voice, darting her eyes around the room. The fact that she had apparently asked for me specifically bewildered me as much as what I assumed she was intent on confessing to, given that I was the head of a task force charged with investigating serial murders and the like. I was uncertain what someone who looked as though she'd seen more than her fair share of drugs would want with me. Likely, I thought, inwardly rolling my eyes, she killed her boyfriend for messing with her needles or something. I would be mistaken in my assumptions, though I can't say I believed her at first, given what I knew about who she claims to be.
I'm the lullaby killer,
she said, finally looking me dead in the eye, still twitching ever so slightly. I had been on the lullaby case for the better part of 5 years, something I had to assume this mad woman to be fully aware of when she asked for me. The station at which we were currently located was not where we had originated, but one that served as more of a central hub for such investigations. Not only had everything we had learned about this serial killer led us to believe it was a man who had murdered 11 children and 6 families across the country, but this lady looked barely capable of picking out her groceries for the week, let alone evading the authorities for half a decade. In addition, Lullaby had been inactive for close to a year by this point, which led more credence to my assumption that this woman was off her rocker. I was honestly not too happy about being assigned this case at first, as I had spent the previous 4 years tracking who we dubbed the Conscience Killer, who had tortured and murdered around 15 people. Before that, there was a serial murderer named Jasmine, as that was something of a calling card for that one. It only took us about 6 months to track him down, but Conscience and Lullaby were far more meticulous. While the Conscience case had gone cold a good 2 years before Lullaby came on the scene, the higher-ups, having assumed that they had either given up or even died, thought it was time to move on, thus putting my team on Lullaby. We had other cases, of course, one of which had us begrudgingly working on Christmas Eve, but that didn't compare to what the woman before me claims to be. "Is that right?" I said with a heavy sigh, being quite sure this woman was just an attention-seeking crackpot.
"It's the truth,"
she insisted, slamming her palm to my desk.
"Uh-huh,"
I replied, unfazed by her outburst.
"And, what exactly inspired you to confess on this chilly Christmas Eve?"
Considering that I had been hoping to head home to my wife and daughter soon, the last thing I wanted was to deal with some crazy lady looking for publicity. In addition to my inner frustrations, we were no closer to catching Lullaby than Conscience. Hell, we would likely have a better chance at tracking down Jack the Ripper than either of those two. So I was certain that this elusive killer would not so casually stroll through my door all neatly wrapped up for Christmas.
"It's the only way,"
she replied, slipping her hand from the desk.
"The only way I can be safe."
Ma'am, I'm going to need you to elaborate quite a bit more, both on your confession, as well as whatever it is that you're afraid of."
He told me to stop, to never pick up my tools again, but..."
She trailed off, gazing down at her hands. It wasn't until then that I noticed the muddy, red stains on her palms. When I looked at where she had slammed her hand to the desk, I could see the faint crimson streaked back from where she had pulled back. I still did not even slightly believe she was who she claims to be, but I was growing more comfortable in the notion she did have reason to be here after all.
"Okay,"
I said,
waving to Douglas, one of our newer recruits. How about we get some samples of that, anything you may have on your person, and get you changed into some clean clothes, huh? Again, she did not resist, only nodded her head, getting to her feet and keeping her posture somewhat hunched. I couldn't tell if it was the weight of her actions that left her looking so ashamed that she was simply exhausted, or coming down from whatever was potentially coursing through her veins. It could be that she was keeping her head lowered to hide her face, as she continued to cut her eyes in all directions while we led her to her next destination. Once forensics got everything they needed from her, we moved her to one of the interrogation rooms. I left her shackled to the table alone for a little while, just to try and get some kind of read on her mental state, as well as give the lab boys a chance to see if they could come up with anything to support her claim. Once some unsettling results came back from the lab, blood traces and hair that did not match the woman awaiting my interrogation, I realized it was time to take this one seriously after all.
"You need to lock me up,"
she demanded, before I even had a chance to sit down. "In due time," I said, taking my seat. "I'm going to need some answers first."
"Lock me away, please. I'm begging you. I'll tell you everything. It's just..."
"Ma'am," I interrupted, "if you calm down, this'll all go a lot easier." She shifted in her chair, still looking from one side to the other, only making eye contact with me in between her constant glances around the small room. "There's nothing to be scared of. Believe me, you're protected here. This may be the safest..."
"You don't understand,"
she belted, attempting to get to her feet, something that was far less effective with her wrists cuffed to the table.
"You can't stop him. Nobody can."
I studied her for a moment, taking in her erratic behavior as further evidence she was tripping on something. "Okay," I said. "If we can't protect you, if this man can still reach you here, why would you be safer in a cell?"
I don't...
She stuttered, with tears trickling down her face. "Look, I don't know who's after you, or whatever reason you would have to risk getting yourself arrested or shot, but you're in good hands here. Now, how about you tell me about the blood trace we found on you, huh?"
"132 Groven Drive, a little town called Grady, maybe 70 miles from here."
She no longer darted her eyes all around her, just studied her hands and the table beneath them. As I approached the door to pass the note to my associates on the outside, I felt a strange sensation. It was as though the temperature dropped about 20 degrees, almost instantly returning to what it was before. The hairs on my arms and the back of my neck still stood on end as I gave a nod to Jenkins, handing him the address the strange woman told me. Shaking it off as the door closed once more, I returned to my spot across from the supposed lullaby killer. While I dreaded what would be found by the Grady Police Department once they reached the address, I was still having a hard time believing this woman was who she claims to be. "You want to give me a heads up on what they're going to find there?" I asked, while she still avoided looking back at me.
"A little girl named Haley. Haley Benson. Her mother and father. What's left of them."
I felt my face flush with rage, wanting nothing more than to lash out at this woman and make her pay for what she did, now that my doubts about her claims were fading. There will always be killers and victims, no matter how much the human race may evolve, something I think it stopped doing a long time ago. But I could never stomach those who hurt children. My mind flashed to my daughter, likely indulging in the dreams of what old Saint Nick may have in store for her soon. Hearing this confession caused my back to stiffen at the thought of what the demon across from me had done, likely only hours before our meet. "You killed them," I said, not questioning this fact, but stating it. She just nodded,
still keeping her eyes focused on her fingers. "Why?" I asked, hoping some semblance of an explanation could prevent me from reaching across the table and pounding her face against it until I felt it crack. "Why, children? What the fuck is wrong with you?"
"I'm saving them," she said, finally looking back at me with large and glassy eyes. "Saving them from the agony of adulthood. They don't suffer when I do it. Just go to sleep and don't wake up."
"Saving? How can..." I could barely convince my mind to conjure anything to respond to this. Did she truly believe she was doing them a favor? That murdering these innocents before they even had a chance to really live was some sort of salvation? My whole body was trembling, wanting nothing more than to tear out the throat of this monster. My face burned with the rage awakening within me, and I knew if I did not get out of this room immediately, I would do something I could not come back from. I sprang to my feet, not saying another word to this horrendous creature, pounding on the door as soon as I reached it. The second Leslie let me out, I ran for the exit, desperate for fresh oxygen to attempt to regulate my borderline hyperventilation. When I finally felt the cold wind on my face, I fell to my knees, screaming out with the hope of calming the fury I was feeling.
"You okay, Chief?"
Leslie asked, having followed me out into the cold.
"Did you hear?"
I asked in between panting breaths.
"Yeah, man. Yeah, I did. It's all right, Mac. We got her now. She'll get the needle for sure." "Kids, Les. I mean, I know what Lullaby did, you know, but..." "Yeah, Chief. It's a whole other thing to be in a room with these fucking monsters. I know what you're feeling.
Just give me a minute, okay?" I asked, still breathing heavily with the snow melting beneath my knees.
"You got it. I'm gonna throw her in a cell?"
"Not yet. I need to get through this. Gotta make sure it's done right. Just give me a few minutes."
"Just yell if you need me,"
Leslie said, heading back through the door. By the time I managed to compose myself and headed back into the warmth of the office, Jenkins had received word from the Grady PD. Just as had been the case with all the other children this awful woman had saved. The little girl apparently looked as though she was only sleeping, with the music box still playing its jingling tune. Her parents, however, did not look quite so peaceful. While every kid Lullaby killed died from a fast-acting poison, one that they were not aware was being introduced into their system while they slept, her methods of doing away with their folks varied from case to case. In several instances, she had allowed the mothers and fathers of her victims to live, but others would not be so lucky. If you can consider surviving such a thing to be considered living, anyway. Three couples were shot while they slept, likely having no idea anyone was even in their house. One had their throats cut during the night, while the other three sets of parents, four now, had been butchered. Though none of them likely had much of a chance to put up a fight, given that the fatal injuries seems to happen first, she apparently was not content to leave it at that, slicing and carving into their flesh as they bled out. From what Sheriff Harker out in Grady said, the master bedroom of that small house was quite the mess by the time she was through. I felt my guts attempt to bubble over again while Jenkins gave me the information, something I thought I had grown immune to after all these years. But after a time, I managed to settle myself back down again.
"You want me to take it from here?"
Leslie asked, as I began to head back to the interrogation room. "No, I got it. I appreciate it, though. I just gotta see this one through, you know?"
"I got you, Chief. Just don't let her get under your skin, okay? You feel like you need to get out of there."
"Yeah, Les. I got you." The woman had barely moved an inch since I had been gone. As much as I could tell, anyway. She still stared down at the table, not even glancing at me when I re-entered the room. "We got the word back from Grady," I said, fighting back my need to clench my jaw as I spoke. "Looks like you're telling the truth." She just nodded, maintaining her hunched-over posture. "So, let's make this quick, yeah?" I said, sliding the sheet of paper and a pen across the table, laying out the recorder. "You give me your full confession, and we'll get you into that cell you wanted." She didn't put up a fight, nor did she waste any time stating the facts. Not only did she speak into the microphone, barely hesitating in between every name she listed, but she wrote down the information as she spoke it. She recalled the name of every child she murdered, though the monikers assigned to any of the parents slipped her mind. Fortunately, I had the records of her crimes with me, to be able to lend a hand with anything she neglected. While she made this progress much easier than any other criminal I had interviewed over my years on the job, I still winced with every detail, though I managed to keep myself composed enough to not act on any of the impulses I was feeling at the time. I could not stand being in the presence of this wretched creature. Regardless of my impatient desire to get as far away from this thing as I could, once her confession came to a close, there was one more thing I had to know before we parted company. "I gotta know," I said, stopping in place as I walked away from the table. "Why did you come here tonight? Why confess? You've always been so meticulous. I was beginning to think you'd quit or something. You could have retired, and we likely would have never tracked you down. So, why?" She didn't speak at first, leaving me to believe there were questions that would go unanswered. I'd gotten what I needed from her. She would surely face the death penalty for her horrendous crimes, but I just couldn't figure it out. Finally, shrugging off my curiosities, I made for the door again with an exhausted sigh.
I tried to stop,"
she said, as I reached to knock on the exit.
"For a long time, I thought I could."
I paced back to the table, setting down my things and taking my seat again.
"After the boy in Milwaukee, the last one before I stopped, I had a visit from someone who knew what I was, what I am."
She began to fidget with the handcuffs, her neck twitching ever so slightly. "A visitor?" I asked, attempting to snap her back from the trance she appeared to be drifting into.
"I have a home. I go back there after these trips across the country. I stay at hotels a lot, but I always come back home. After Milwaukee, when I got back there, he was there. He was inside my house. He was waiting for me."
Her bodily spasms and shivering extremities worsened the more she spoke, almost inspiring me to mimic her. It could also be that the room felt like it had grown colder again, as if her story had some otherworldly effect on the furnace of the old building or the ventilation system.
"As soon as I saw him just sitting there in the darkness, I pulled out my gun, firing 3 shots at him without blinking an eye. He didn't even twitch. Just dusted off his vest like I tossed a snowball at him. He still didn't speak, just held his hand out, gesturing to my sofa. I could tell, you know, that he knew what I am. I didn't put up a fight. Not after seeing that. It wouldn't work. I could tell what he was, too. Who he was, anyway."
I wanted to cut in and ask who exactly she was talking about. Impatience and all that. But I didn't want to interrupt. I wanted to see where this was going, even if I had a feeling it was heading to a place I wouldn't believe in the end.
He told me that he was giving me one chance to stop. He didn't have to specify what he was referring to, nor how he knew about it in the first place. I never believed in him or any of that stuff, really. But being face to face, even in the darkness, I could see it. I see it in his eyes.
She whipped her head to one side, her lower lip trembling as she stared at the wall opposing the two-way mirror. I followed her gaze, but saw nothing. I glanced around the room, finding nothing unexpected or unusual, but she appeared frozen in time for those seconds while she glared at the wall.
What?
I'm sorry,
she said, snapping her head back to face me, wiping tears away with the back of her arm.
It's nothing. Just not much time left. Not now.
Okay, I said, beginning to feel like this was some sort of performance I was witnessing. Perhaps the groundwork for an insanity plea. But I still wanted to know where her story was going, even if I was starting to feel like a fool for indulging her in this.
After that, I did stop. Stopped for a long time.
She began again, barely missing a beat.
It wasn't easy, but not at first. Every time I saw a mother yelling at her child in a store, or a father looking as though he wanted to slap his kid, I wanted to release them from the pain of it all. What my parents put me through, I wished for it to end, for someone to sing me a lullaby, just like I did for the ones I saved.
All right, I said, growing more exhausted from this display I was certain to be a fabrication for the sake of her defense. I think I've heard enough.
No, wait. She yelped as I got to my feet. I'm almost done, I promise. I need to get this out.
Okay, I said with a heavy sigh, dropping back into my chair. But don't expect me to believe you're insane.
I don't. I'm not. I know what I've done.
Proceed, then.
It got harder, you know, to resist it. My desire to save them. For a long time, I fought them back, those urges. But last night, I couldn't. I had traveled to Grady just to get away for a bit. Wasn't heading anywhere in particular. I just drove in one direction and ended up there. It's a nice little town. A little eerie, in a strange sort of way, but pleasant, you know? I was picking up a few things to take back to my hotel room when I overheard them yelling at the little girl. Little Haley. I walked a few aisles over and saw them pointing in her face while she cried, looking so embarrassed about the scene her parents were making. It was as though they completely ignored everyone else in the store, not caring about how uncomfortable they were making them, or their precious daughter. When they left, I followed them. I kept my distance, just as I had with so many others before. It was like muscle memory, the old instincts taking the wheel once more. It didn't take long to reach their home, or close enough to where I could see them enter. I hadn't even decided to do it by that point, not that I was aware of anything. But I did. I did it anyway.
She glanced to the left of the room again, this time appearing far less afraid than the last. It was almost like she was seeking acceptance from the wall, like the brick and mortar were a jury she was confessing to. When the sound of thunder outside almost caused me to jump in my seat, the lights in the room began to flicker. I knew we had to wrap this up soon and get her in her cell before the bottom fell out. We had backup power in case of emergencies, but these old buildings with their ancient wiring could be quite fickle when a storm broke out.
He was just standing there when I got back to the hotel, she said, snapping my attention back from the rumbling beyond the walls. Just leaned up against the wall in his nice suit, smoking a cigarette, staring at me. I knew what he was there for. To take me back with him. I didn't even get out of the car. I just backed out and drove until my tires led me here.
She didn't speak anymore after those last words, nor while we led her into her cell. She said her piece and left it at that. We had everything we needed. That was something, at least. With the storm raging outside, my back aching from the tension of those previous hours, and my body feeling completely drained from the experience, I just headed back to my office while a few of the guys began to filter out for the night. The lights were flickering more erratically as I sat down at my desk, rubbing my temples, attempting to fight off the burgeoning headache. When the thunder clapped so loudly, it almost sounded like an explosion nearby. The room fell dark. When the lights blinked back on, for the briefest moments before they went out again, I could swear I saw someone standing in my doorway. I jerked back in my chair, almost toppling it to the floor. But when my surroundings became clear again after the power flicker regulated, there was no trace of anyone. My heart was still beating wildly while I walked to the door, leaning out like a frightened child, darting my eyes from side to side. I saw nobody. Only the empty hallway. Whether my mind was playing tricks on me, likely inspired by the unsettling events of the day, or if there was indeed something to the woman's claims, I was not prepared to debate at the time. As it would soon become very clear, this bizarre night still had some surprises in store for me that I never could have predicted. Though my chest was still throbbing from what I chalked up to be a hallucination fueled by my emotions having been put through the ringer, I couldn't quite figure out why I was so on edge about it. It wasn't as if I was alone in the building when I saw the silhouette at my door, why I assumed it to be something to fear, rather than the more likely scenario of it being one of my colleagues, I couldn't say. Either way, it turned out to be nothing but my imagination, from what I could tell at the time. "Get your shit together, Mac," I told myself, attempting to clear my head and shake off this crazy night. With the hour growing late, an abundance of paperwork to complete, and the lights continuing to blink in and out, I wanted nothing more than to head home to my family. When the clapping of the thunder outside grew more consistent, I was tempted to just stash my responsibilities for the night and try to reach my house before it got any worse. I began to do that very thing when the screaming broke out from somewhere below. Being fully aware that the sounds came from the holding cells, which currently housed only one occupant, I headed straight to the security room to get a read on what was happening.
"It just keeps going in and out," Parker said when I entered. "She started freaking out, pushing her back to the wall, and then it went static."
I stared at the screen, seeing only the occasional flashing image of what was happening in her cell. Though the display had no sound, her muffled shrieks coming from the lower levels provided a soundtrack to what we could make out. As Parker said, she was pressed against the wall, but it almost looked as though a violent wind had broken out in her cell, blowing her hair as hard to the bricks as her body was. "I'm going to head down there," I said, caressing the gun on my hip to ensure it remained holstered in case I should need it.
"You want me to come with?"
Parker asked. "Nah. You keep an eye on things up here. I'll yell out if it looks like there's anything to worry about. Likely she's just putting on a show or some shit." As I headed from the room directly to the stairs, I had little doubt that this was some bizarre attempt to further convince us that she was insane. I had already thought the story she told was designed to set the groundwork of an insanity play, and this ridiculous display was only securing that to be a fact, though I still did not understand why she would turn herself in, only to pull something like this. When I reached the lower level, the woman's screams were so loud and gut-wrenching, I could barely believe that anyone was capable of producing such a sound. I attempted to call out as I walked the narrow hallway between the rows of cells, but I couldn't hear my own words, let alone expect her to. With the blinking of the lights and the trembling floor beneath my feet, I feared we may be experiencing far more than a simple storm beyond these walls. Though the shuddering ground made it difficult to keep a constant pace, it didn't take me long to draw close to the room we had Lullaby stored in. But as I closed that final gap between us, the woman's agonizing wails suddenly stopped. My ears were still ringing from the sheer volume of her horrendous howls, even with the only sounds remaining being those of the still shuddering building. I almost felt my legs give out when I finally reached the cell I was seeking. The one that no longer held the murderer I had locked away inside only an hour or so ago. It was as though some sort of exit had opened in the center of the room like a rectangular, door-shaped hole, erected in between realities. As bizarre as that sounds. It wasn't that alone that caused my extremities to weaken, but the pool of blood that was smeared across the floor in the direction of the entrance to somewhere else. While I gazed at this puzzling and grotesque sight, something else began to register in my frenzied mind. I could feel eyes upon me, not from the strange and eerie gap in reality, but from the opposing side of the cell. When I turned to see the flickering red and orange glowing eyes of the man who sat perched upon the cot against the other wall, I finally lost the fight to remain standing. He looked like some sort of feral beast, his long blonde hair hanging in front of his face as he gazed back at me, with that piercing illumination burning into my retina. As he tilted his head from one side to the other, I could only stare back, transfixed by this haunting individual. The gray, pinstriped vest and matching pants, the white shirt with the sleeves rolled up to reveal pale and toned forearms. Even the polished black shoes seemed completely out of place compared to that beastly look in his otherworldly gaze. While we continued to stare at one another, I feared that I may be his next victim, before he darted so quickly from the cot I could barely even register it. He just shot towards that door-shaped opening, which sealed itself back shut the second he crossed through, leaving only silence and a simmering puddle of crimson gore in its wake. In that instance, though, I didn't quite notice at first. The storm outside fell silent. The lights flickered no more, nor did the ground and walls shudder. When I would eventually pull my eyes away from the ghastly sight of the vacated cell, my still shivering legs guiding me back to the floor above, I would see that the rain had stopped as well. No lightning, no thunder. The ground outside didn't even look wet. When my senses began to return, I headed back to the security room to check in with Parker to see if he had witnessed any of the maddening events I had seen. After finding the room empty, leaving me to assume he had headed to the bathroom or something else far more rational than what my erratic thoughts were attempting to seek out, I took a walk around the office to find no trace of anyone. After a good 10 or 20 minutes of inspecting vacant rooms and deserted hallways, I thought it best if I headed out for the night as well, as I had to assume everyone had bailed out during the storm. Rational explanations, as though that was even a concept anymore. It wasn't until I headed back to my office that I once more felt my legs turn to gelatin. Though I hadn't seen his face before, given the hair and glowing eyes blocking my view, I instantly recognized the man sitting in front of my desk when I entered the room. He still wore the pinstriped vest and pants, now accompanied by a matching jacket. His hair was neatly pulled back and tied into a braid, allowing me to see the surprisingly gentle and friendly expression on his face. I didn't speak a word as I strolled around my desk, taking my seat behind it. I just stared back at the man who regarded me with a small half-smile on his face, not arrogantly or mockingly. Just pleasantly, in a way. "You mind?" he asked after fishing a pack of cigarettes from the inside pocket of his suit jacket. Normally, smoking is not permitted in the building, but I would be lying if I were to claim I had never indulged after a trying day.
I just pulled open the bottom drawer of my desk, fished out the ashtray I would use for emergencies, and slid it across the tabletop, not breaking my gaze from the stranger. "Thanks, Gov," he said, giving me a wink with the click of his tongue lighting up his smoke. From what I could tell from the few words he'd spoken, his accent sounded English. London or the surrounding areas, if I had to guess, given the slang he used. Of course, I was well aware he likely did not originate from anywhere across the pond, nor on this earth, for that matter. He held the open pack out to me with his eyebrows raised as if to suddenly ask if I'd like one. While I wagered an inner debate about taking candy from strangers and such things, I highly doubted he plans to take me out with an exploding butt or something. So I fished one out, accepting the lighter he offered up next. "I gave her one chance," he said, tucking the cigarette back into his pocket. "Once upon a time, I wouldn't have given her that. Well, back then, I likely wouldn't have given a toss about her hobby. But that's irrelevant, all things considered."
"What? Where did..."
"Sent her back home. She was gonna end up there soon enough either way. Saves time and energy in the long run this way."
"Back home?"
He just gave another tongue-click wink, but I didn't need an answer to that question.
"How? I mean, what do I tell people? How do I explain? We arrested the lullaby killer, but..."
My mind and mouth were betraying me. The flood of questions thundering across the surface of my mind harder than the rain had been pelting the roof not so long ago, but I couldn't form them into words. How could I account for what happens to the woman who confessed to these horrific crimes? What do I tell people? How do I explain this away into a neat and tidy package? Where did everyone go? What did this man want with me? Abigail Lenore Branch was gunned down while attempting to flee the scene after the Grady Police Department received an anonymous call. They showed up at the house before she managed to take the life of little Haley Benson or her parents, but she left behind enough evidence of what she had been planning. He said, almost dismissively. She would be cremated soon after any evidence was retrieved. She never entered this building, nor did she interact with anyone within these walls. As for your colleagues, well, I sent them home. It is Christmas, after all. They'll have no recollection of what they may or may not have witnessed tonight. While all of this sounded way too far-fetched to even entertain, I believed everything he told me. Be it the facts of what I saw with my own eyes, the absence of my associates, or just something about this man that convinced me he was telling the truth, I cannot say. But there was still that lingering fear of why I was exempt from these altered memories.
Why? I mean, if you sent everyone else home, changed what happened, what they saw. Why? Why not you?
He asked, leaning forward in his chair. I think you know the answer to that one, mate. I felt a sharp pain ram directly into the middle of my spine, almost paralyzing me where I sat. The blood drained from my face with the realization that he knew everything. It wasn't exactly what I feared when I found him awaiting my arrival, of course, but I think I still held on to that lingering hope that this was all about Lullaby. "In a lot of ways, I understand why you did it. I can relate to it, you know? Still, that didn't make it right. That didn't make it just." We just stared at each other as I attempted to mentally prepare for my door to erect in the center of the room, to drag me back to his place, as it had the woman in cell 13. "Always thought the conscience killer had a nice ring to it," he said, snuffing the butt of his cigarette into the ashtray. "Makes sense, given how you chose your victims and all." It's true what he said. The name did fit. All 15 of the men I tortured and killed had slipped through the system in one bullshit way or another. Each of them did far worse things than I did to them, but the justice system was broken sometimes. I couldn't let these men walk the streets again. Not with what they were capable of.
Always wondered, he said, pulling my attention back to the matter at hand. Was it their conscience or yours that the name was based on? Both, I suppose, I said with a hollow laugh, finally attempting to accept my fate. I just couldn't sleep at night, knowing they were free out there, you know. In the end, I guess I thought of myself as their conscience, since they didn't seem to have one of their own. Why'd you give it up? He asked, lighting another smoke and tossing me the pack. After my wife got pregnant, I just couldn't anymore. Couldn't risk it. Risk losing everything. When it was just the two of us, I don't know. I thought she'd still be okay if something went wrong, if I got busted or any of them fought back too hard. But becoming a parent, it wasn't just about me and them anymore. Even though the monsters live in the same world as your little girl. It's not easy, knowing that. But I was never arrogant enough to think I could stop them all. It was enough at the time that I put down the ones I was able to. We're teaching her to defend herself, but I know life is unpredictable. All we can do is hope, you know? Do you think they deserved what you did to them? The torture, the hours and sometimes days of suffering as you made them beg for death. Did they deserve that? I stared back at the man who continued to study me with every question. I couldn't know what answer he expected, nor which he wanted, but I wouldn't play games. The more we talked, the more I believed I would never see my little girl or my wife again. Something that almost caused me to scream out at the thought. But these are risks I took every single day I wore the badge. If this was to be my last night, I would leave this world with my head held high. No lies, no pleas for mercy, no begging or bargaining. If this man was who I believed him to be, none of that would be of any use anyway. Daniel Matthews, the first one I killed. He raped and murdered his 8-year-old daughter, his own child. He viciously tore her innocence away before leaving her in a pool of her own blood, and he walked out of court, free and clear because of a technicality. Antoine Nash, a serial pedophile and meth peddler, also walked away with a slap on the wrist because the arresting officer skipped a few steps when gathering evidence. Those are just two of the 6 sons of bitches I put down, and the world's a better place because of it. 100%, yes. They deserve that and more, and I hope they're burning in hell. As we gazed at one another, I saw the sliver of a smile reach across his lips. It wasn't sinister. There was no malice in his eyes. I didn't feel as though he was about to pounce on me or lash out in any way. He just smiled, subtly nodding his head. "We are not all that different, you and I," he said, smearing out a second cigarette as he had the first. "But I do believe it is in your best interest for conscience to remain retired." He got to his feet, straightening out his waistcoat and jacket, looking back at me with a strange expression I couldn't quite figure out. It was something compassionate, but firm. Understanding, but pensive, in a way. "You'll remember what transpired this night, for now at least. After a time, those memories will linger, though not in a way you can so casually revisit. It'll all still be there, but buried away. You'll not be able to recall my face, nor the conversation we shared, but there'll be excerpts in your dreams on occasion, more so when those old tendencies begin to rear their little heads." As he turned from me to head towards the door of my office, I was certain this was just a trick. Something to set me at ease before the rug was pulled from beneath me, but that didn't happen. "You're a good man, Clayton McKenzie," he said, stopping with his back to me as he stood in the doorway. "But should that ever change, we shall most certainly meet again." With that, he walked out of my office, rounding the corner and out of view. I just sat there, frozen in place, staring down at my trembling fingers. After a moment, I got to my weakened feet and followed the course the stranger had taken, seeing no trace of him. Though my mind was still reeling, I shut off the lights and headed to my car. When I got home, I embraced my wife far more enthusiastically than I thought I ever had before. I walked to my daughter's bedroom, where she lay sleeping. I just sat there for a time, watching her eyes dart around beneath their lids, feeling grateful tears leak down my face. While I sat in the darkness of the room, I swore to myself that I would never allow the conscience killer to reawaken, that I would never risk losing this most precious gift. When I awoke the next day, I wrote all of this down before it would inevitably be buried away, as the stranger warned. The news reported the death of Abigail Branch at the hands of the Grady Police Department, as well as the truth about what she was in life. This, along with the glee of my little girl's face as she unwrapped all of the presents provided by jolly old Saint Nick by the way of her loving parents, caused my heart to burn with how content I felt. Some weeks later, I handed in my resignation. Regardless of the years I had spent on the job, I was not fit for it anymore. Not to mention, I thought it best to remove any temptation to return to habits that were not good for me. My wife supported me while I took some night classes to earn an engineering degree, which led to a much more stable working environment for both my health and sanity. As time passed, as the stranger said, I forgot most of what happens that bizarre night, but I do still see excerpts in my dreams, as he predicted. Though I remain true to the promise I made to myself back then, that I would never return to my old passion project, I am grateful for the meeting I now only revisit in my sleep. One thing I can honestly say, regardless of what came before or what might still be around the corner, I will never receive a gift as life-changing as the one I got that Christmas Eve, the night after which two murderers would never kill again.